the things that you're teaching us uses a lot of feedback from equipment. What would you recommend as like a starting battery of feedback equipment you would purchase?
Yeah, really good question.
You do videos based on watching other training methods. Are there three athletes that you could name that you look at and you think, maybe I could improve them?
Oh, that's a good one, that. It's slightly controversial. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Boxing Science Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be doing a Q&A session with a little bit of a twist. We're going to be doing this with our participants on our recent Ultimate Strength, Speed and Power workshop that we hosted at the Boxing Science Performance Centre. The guys threw a range of different questions at me around adapting to individual characteristics within a group session, adapting the Boxing Science training methods into different training environments. We're lucky to have a fantastic range of kit so we can assess different aspects of performance, but we do have an understanding. A lot of coaches and athletes have limited facilities, so this is a fantastic question that I'll go into detail on how you can adapt our methods into any training environment. Also answering an interesting question around our Boxing Science React series, the athletes I was most impressed with and an athlete that I would want to train at Boxing Science. Any more questions for our Q&A sessions, please leave them in the comment box below. I hopefully enjoy this episode. It's a bit of a weird setup for a Q&A, isn't it? Normally we just sit here, but because we're filming, we've got a portable mic, so then we've got your questions on record as well. So if anybody wants to kick us off, anything about S&C, business, coaching, boxing in general?
Obviously, someone new comes to you. What's your kind of protocol for assessing them?
Yeah, so
from like obviously your strength, fitness, performance. So what is the whole kind of layout? How do you structure that?
Yeah, so we've got the Boxing Science Testing Battery, which analyzes their movement, their speed, their strength, their power. Also, we have an assessment for estimating punch force and punching speed, and then we work on their high intensity fitness. So if I take you through the full testing battery, the movement is like an overhead squat. And now with movement assessments, you can kind of get bogged down with like FMS and loads of different like physio screening activities. But when you do physio screening activities, it highlights like quite a lot of problems. The problems arise if you're really looking for them. With the overhead squat, you kind of get a lot of the answers through that as well. If an athlete has got an injury or something like that, I would refer them to physio to a physio screening. Thing is, with physio screening as well, it's quite subjective and it's to the trained eye. So that's why I put them up towards physio. So like with overhead squat, I can get a good gauge of, are they in balance between left and right? Are they tight in their shoulders? Are they tight in their hips? Also do a single leg squat to stand assessment as well. So you can see the imbalances between left and right. Low limb, but also through the trunk rotation as well. That gives us a good indication there. And then we've got our jump assessments, so something that we're going to be doing this weekend, the reactive strength index. So that's a 10x5 pogo hop, assessing their ability to produce force and flight time, how quickly they can absorb that and reproduce that force through the contact time as well. So not only do we take what we call reactive strength index, RSI, we also look at in detail what they actually need to work on. Do they need to work on the flight time? So that's like basically the ability to produce force, or do we need to work on the contact time, the ability to control that force, absorb it, and then reproduce it. Then we've got counter movement jump and squat jump, which is assessment of lower body impulse. Then we work onto their strength profile. So something that you did earlier, the load velocity profile, seeing how they deal when they're stepping up in terms of weight load, see what kind of strength athlete are they. Are they fast, but not that strong? Or are they strong, but need to work on their speed? And this can really look at and help us analyze their performance and tell them exactly what they need to work on. What are their strengths? Do we work towards them strengths? Look at their areas for improvement and work on them weaknesses. Then we do the landmine punch throw test, which is assessing their ability to produce force and speed through punch specific action. Start off with a med ball throw, but we've adapted that just because you're getting better feedback, you're more accurate with the med ball punch throw, with the trajectory of it. So some people might throw it more forceful, but because they haven't got the trajectory right and the throw might not get as much distance. And also when they throw it and they throw it long, we're just trying to see where it lands. So with a landmine punch throw, it's much more controlled, much more data-driven as well. And also we can create like load velocity profiles. So we look at whether they're fast with a lighter weight and see now they kind of maintain that towards a heavier weight as well. Then we work on like kind of core assessments. So we'll do the prone and supine holds. We used to do it with the lateral holds where we're seeing left and right obliques, But we found that that were quite a stressful position. It's quite hard for them to actually maintain that position. And also, we didn't really assess that maximum force and intent. So that's why we're now looking towards doing rotational isometric testing. That will give us a bigger insight to how strong they are in their obliques. Then we work on some fitness, and there's various fitness tests that we do. A lactate profile, which is a bit back, like boxing, where it's 3 minutes on, 1 minute off. We sort them from 9 kilometers an hour or 10. And then after each 3 minutes, they have a rest. We take their blood lactate. We take their heart rate. We take their RP, the rate of perceived exertion. So how their heart rate's like kind of responding, the cardiovascular fitness, how the muscles are responding towards that increased intensity. Do they require more like kind of lactate to be able to perform? And then what their rate in perceived exertion is, how hard they're finding it. Okay, so start that around about 10. We increase it by 1 kilometer an hour each time. And each stage, what we'll see is an increase in heart rate, an increase in lactate, and also that trend in lactate as well. So then we can profile them a little bit like the load velocity profile, where we're seeing is an athlete more high intensity based, or they're more endurance based, or they're a hybrid of the two. And then we've got a 30-15, which is a little bit like a bleep test, where it's working on their high intensity capabilities, basically the max effort. Then also we've started doing a 30-second wing gate on the air bike. So 30-second all out effort to just see what their maximum intensive fitness is like. So yeah, that's about an overview of
the... And then just quickly, then how do you then discuss with the coaches? I can imagine that must be quite a difficult thing, you know, like this guy's really, say, hypomobilized, really tight, needs to do this, but really needs to like be specific with his, say, anaerobic, like threshold training. How do you get that across to coaches who are very much, say, could be, say, locked in that old school method of he needs to run more if he's unfit? Like they don't, how would that conversation go?
It's obviously, it's all individualized, whether, you know, how much a coach actually engages with it. Most coaches look for feedback, but they won't want like it in full 100% detail. Maybe like explain a little bit like what the athlete is in front of them. So I've had to just talk with a coach and say like, right, this is what lactate profile is. This athlete might struggle going up through the gears a little bit. So this is what you need to look for in this bout. So that's like the detailed feedback that I'll give. With the athlete, we'll give them a full profile and say what the strengths and areas for improvement are. We'll pass that on to the coach, and it's up to the coach then how many questions they want to ask. Like, what we don't want to do, overload them with science, make them feel uncomfortable, or threatened. You know, we don't want them to be thinking that way, coming in like smart arses and saying, all your training's been terrible. And that's probably what we've probably been guilty of in the past. Not intentional, but that's sometimes how you can end up coming across. So we've got to keep that in mind and say how much feedback that we give the coach. Obviously, to the athlete, we say, right, these are your strengths, these are areas for improvement, this is exactly how we're going to do it. And then obviously tracking their changes as well and making sure that the coach is in the loop in terms of like, if they're hitting the numbers and they're hitting the personal bests, that's great. And if they're a little bit behind, they need to know that as well. So yeah, it's about gauging what that coach wants to do and how much information that they actually want to know, but still getting the important information across.
I have this situation. I have two different, very different boxers, and one might be very explosive, but and carry strength with the explosiveness, but won't carry it into the later rounds. While I have another boxer who's not quite as explosive in the beginning, but he successfully carries the power through the rounds. So it's like, how do I adjust it? What do I look for in a specific training set for each individual boxer?
So with that, with the first one, in terms of like their strength and power, endurance, a lot of like kind of punchers and explosive athletes often respond really high in terms of lactate when they're doing the lactate profile. So what they'll see is like when they go to their lactate threshold, and then as soon as they hit the lactate threshold, which is about 4 millimole per liter, boom, it goes up straight away. So what they need to do, they need to be exposed to them high amounts of lactate to be able to tolerate it, but then also to control it as well. Your 30-second max out sprints on the air bike, which you'll have experienced before when we've been doing the course at the other course that we do. That is the ability to work at them really, really high lactates. You need to expose the body towards that so they know what that feeling is. And that's the main thing, is perception of it. Because if your boxer is going up towards them high lactates, naturally, no matter how much training they'll do, they might end up going up towards them like kind of painful thresholds. And they need to be able to think like, right, I'm comfortable in the uncomfortable here. And then also muscle buffering capacity, which is being able to control it, the 2 minutes on, 3 minutes off, 12 seconds on, 48 seconds off, like repeated sprint training. And that's basically controlling that acidosis. So you're not seeing that, boom, that upward trend straight away. So that is probably a contributing factor to that athlete. Whereas like the athlete that's more of an endurance profile, is pretty similar in terms of like still working on them 30 second max out sprints, but maybe prioritize your strength training over the conditioning. Because if he's showing like some good strength and speed endurance in towards the latter rounds, making them more explosive will help him unlock that a little bit more. So I'd be like thinking, prioritizing strength training, plyometrics, your loaded jumps and everything, and maybe looking for that minimum effective dose on the conditioning so you're not fatiguing them too much. Obviously do enough to make sure that they're still getting fit and still making weight. It's hard to unlock them strength and speed characteristics when you've got a really intense conditioning program as well. So I'd be looking to do a little bit like that. Maybe like getting it into your warm-up, into your boxing warm-up, getting them fired up, ready to go, working on some potentiation exercises, some isometrics, plyometrics, and then going into your boxing, that might start unlocking a bit of speed and power into that athlete.
So it's just the prevalence of each, and then you just maximize, you put more, when you're making the program, you put more of the plyo and the iso for the steady guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And
just being able to, yeah, just being able to unlock that. Mm. That speed and max strength potential. You also, how old is this athlete as well?
So one's 24, the other's 26. So the steady one is 26.
Yeah. So they've still got enough time to make them changes.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
like you get some athletes that are beyond the 30s, then it's like, this is what you got. You've got an endurance athlete in front of you. Work towards their strengths. When they're like in the 20s or younger, you've got them that time to start working with the physiology a little bit better.
You do videos based on watching other training methods and then you break down the exercises to say like whether they're good or bad.
Yeah.
So based on that, are there three athletes that you could name that you look at and you think maybe I could improve them for this reason or not?
Oh, that's a good one, that.
And also
controversial.
And also maybe like the opponent that they would face. So then that's your reason for maybe making that selection.
Yeah, it's a good one. Should I just say three people that I was most impressed with in terms of the Reacts series, and then three people that I'm not as impressed? Okay, so all right, okay, I'll break it down like that. So Usyk, really, really good. Yeah, Usyk's training methods are really good. But then what we're really good about as well is that when I broke it down, is that there was strong justifications for him to do it. So like, for example, I did CrossFit. Now, I wouldn't recommend CrossFit for boxing, but for Usyk it was like, right, for him, he's probably taking up strength conditioning a little bit later on in his career. Is he gonna maximize his strength and his explosiveness with all that training history? Probably not. But is he gonna get some speed adaptations from that? Yeah. Is he gonna get some high intensity adaptations from it? Yeah, he is. With his running, you don't hardly ever see him like sprint training. So then you see he needs to find a way to explore them high intensity conditioning methods. So he does assault bike, he does CrossFit, he does upper body skiing, he does rowing as well. And all these, like, I'd probably not do that with that athlete. For him, you can see what the justifications are with him. Javonta Davis surprised me as well. He had a really good mindset in terms of like longevity. Even though he's only young still, he's like thinking about looking after his body, doing strength conditioning for the right reasons. He's saying about how he never wants to get beaten because he hasn't put the work into the training camp. So it's a little bit like what we have on the wall here, master the things that take no talent. When I see that, I think like, yeah, that's exactly the kind of athlete that you'll want to work with. Obviously, he's got like a few things going off outside the ring, but like in terms of his mindset, in terms of training, that seems pretty good. Bivol was like really, really good. Like his methods weren't like maximum strength training, but the specific strength training that he did was excellent. His rotational training, his punch-specific training, everything like that. That was excellent. Who would I look at in the React series that I'd probably think, like, if I worked with them, I could have the biggest impact? It'd probably be Ryan Garcia. He's long-limbed, he's powerful, he's explosive. A lot of his training is done in circuits, just beasting him, light alerts. If you got him stronger and did it in the right way, you're looking at some athlete, because he is a brilliant athlete as it is. But if you're getting him under load, getting him moving in the right way, conditioning him in the right way, that's really important, because we're saying with Zach's athlete, he's got the power, but has he got that power endurance? Off the top of my head, I don't know whether he's stopped anybody in the latter rounds yet. He's always stopped people like kind of in the early rounds, and he hasn't really seemed to be able to go through the gears. I'm just thinking Luke Campbell, what round was that in? Mid rounds, yeah. Imagine if you getting him on the 30-second max out sprints, and with that explosiveness that he can take that power from the first round through to the 12th, looking at a really good athlete. And he's at the right age as well. So all them superstars that we're talking about, they're all past 30 years old and in the mid-30s. So it's like you're working with what you've got there and working towards their strengths and making them little tweaks. Whereas with Ryan Garcia, you've got 24 years old. He's got a fantastic genetic profile. He's already got really good physical characteristics that you can just throw loads at, and you've got an incredible athlete in front of you.
So when Tank beats him, you'll just give him a DM.
Obviously, the things that you're teaching us uses a lot of feedback from equipment, but not everyone can start off with that level. What would you recommend as like a starting battery of a test you'd use, which you've gone through, but then the feedback equipment you would purchase to utilize with, now say people who are on say normal gyms or amateur level before you even get into this higher level elite?
Yeah, really good question. So with the jump testing, so we've obviously got the OptiJump there. The next best thing, well, obviously you've got other like jump mats and everything like that, but probably the cheapest thing that you can do is using MyJump app, which is on your phone. It's £10. Basically work out the contact time, flight time, and then when they contact again, and that gives you feedback in terms of like their jump height. So that's probably one. The other one is probably just getting some chalk and jumping as high as you can and touching. So when we used to do these workshops down in London, when we didn't have all the kit, that's literally what we did. It's like, right, jump up there, see how high you can reach. Can either do a sticker on the wall or something like that. So something as simple as that. We've got broad jumps that we can do, get the cones out. Instead of looking to jump high, we look to jump long. And we can get the cones and go, right, you need to beat that. So that's probably like the cheapest way to test, but make sure that they're getting that feedback there as well. Isometrics, you've got the scales, you can go as cheap as £15, £10 on the Amazon weighing scales. Obviously with the gym aware, it's quite hard to replicate. Now there's a free app, isn't there, Tommy? What's that called? Metric VBT, which is like basically put a point on there on the screen, and basically it calculates the velocity of the lift. If you're not that good with technology, it's about coach's eye as well, making sure that they're lifting fast and everything. This is something that we had to do before we started using BBT. I was coaching athletes for 6 years before I started using the gym aware, and just getting that athlete feedback. Can they move it as fast? Are they maintaining that posture as well? So yeah, the few things, med ball, getting the tape measure, doing the med ball punch throw instead of the landmine punch throw. You're looking at like testing, like it was saying about blood lactate. You can just do lactate profile, but on using the heart rate monitor or using RPE. RPE is a massive factor, and that's for free. You can use RPE on, obviously on fitness, but you can use it on strength as well. So if you are doing 150 kilos on trap bar deadlift, you can score that, right, what was that out of 10? If it's an 8, that's great. We might be able to push them up a little bit. But let's say in 3-4 weeks' time, then you ask what the RPE is, 150 kilos, and gone down to 6, and that's them getting stronger, more explosive, and feeling comfortable under that. So yeah, so using RP, a few little things, a few little cues there.
And basically I've got somebody who's, I think he's about 14. Obviously a lot of weights and stuff you get recommended not to do as a child. Mm. Do you guys do that with anyone? Do you have anyone under 18, or is there anything you'd recommend to do or not to do?
Yeah, so we're big fans of youth training, boxing. That's why we got into the sport in the first place, and that's the main message that we wanted to do, is influence the next generation of boxing. The younger, obviously, you're not supposed to lift them too heavy. 11, 12, 13 years old, probably looking more movement-based training rather than and skill acquisition, rather than actual lifting heavy weights. When they get to around about 14 for your boxer there, you've got to assess kind of what their training sphere is. Have they gone through building up them foundational movement patterns first when they've been younger? Are they ready to lift? If they're not, then you build up them foundational movement patterns. They have gone through that process, then they're ready to lift a little bit of load. Doesn't have to be too heavy, doesn't have to be above the body weight, but it's something that's kind of grooving that pattern, especially when they get from 14 through to 17, they go from here up to here, go through that growth spurt as well, their movement changes as well. So it's important to keep training it as they go along so they don't get to 17 and they don't know how to use the body. So yeah, just working on them fundamental movement patterns, fundamental lifts. Younger athletes, if they're in the gym quite often, is introducing them to Olympic lifting. You're not getting them under two necessarily higher loads, but you're teaching them a skill, teaching them the technique that they might not got opportunity to when they're a bit older. A lot of boxers in here, when they come in and they're like, let's say 20 up to 30 years old, they're going into important fights. So when they're doing a training camp, we can't do Olympic lifting with them because we're having to spend so much time on the technique, got movement limitations in the elbows and the shoulders and the hips. So that actually limits the amount of load and limits the technique that they can actually perform on them. So it limits our ability to do Olympic lifting. This is what we're going to mention in this next presentation as well. So when they're a kid and they're not wanting to lift too heavy, getting them to work on Olympic lifting is really, really beneficial for them because that's giving them a tool to then take into their later career. And that's what you want to do. You want to try and broaden their athletic toolbox as much as possible to enhance their career when they're further. So it's not about getting them as strong or as fit as possible. Is preparing them for when they're older. Another one is plyometrics, teaching them how to move and express force and getting them faster is really beneficial for youth athletes as well.
How did you guys start off boxing science? What was the beginning and how has it evolved? Because of course, now you've got athletes from all over coming in, but that wasn't always the case, I imagine.
No, it weren't. So boxing science, basically when I first started getting into strength and conditioning, the reason why I wanted to work with boxers is because the first time I even trained when I was 13 years old is when I watched Rocky and I wanted to train like Rocky. I used to do hundreds of sit-ups, which hasn't helped my posture in later life, hundreds and hundreds of sit-ups, press-ups, going out on runs, listening to the Rocky soundtrack. So I've always had like admiration of training like a boxer. I was like first getting into strength and conditioning, I watched Manny Pacquiao and Amir Khan, and they trained with Alex Ariza, strength and conditioning coach. And not many athletes were doing strength and conditioning at that time, so it really, really stood out. And I was like, right, that's what I want to do. I want to be a strength and conditioning coach for a boxer. But there wasn't any like ways in, really, in terms of like for strength and conditioning in boxing. And then there weren't any, are there any peer-reviewed articles or testing standards or many top-end boxers actually doing strength and conditioning. It was quite novel for Amir Khan and Pacquiao to do it. With that, I started going into different avenues. I mentioned earlier, football, rugby, working with a lot of university teams as well. But my kind of vision was to be eventually working boxing, but I didn't know where it was. The only kind of S&C jobs in boxing was at GB Boxing with amateur boxers. So in 2012, Kell Brook had a tough fight with unknown American at the time, Carson Jones. In a fight that he should have just wiped the floor with him. Won on two cards, drew another, but basically he weren't at the races that day. They decided then that needed to improve the strength and conditioning and the nutrition. Kel and his team went to Sheffield Hallam University with Dave Hember and Alan Ruddock, start doing strength and conditioning and sports science. There's actually a path there. I could build up from the bottom at the grassroots to eventually get to that position because boxers are going to take part in it. So as Alan was working at the top end, the glitz and glamour, I decided like I wanted to get into it, but I didn't quite know how. A boxer, a student boxer in the university gym that I was working in, they wanted strength and conditioning. From there, I met the coach, which is really important when you're trying to expand into a new area. It's meeting the coach, talking to him about what I'm going to do with this student boxer, Brendan, who's a very, very good friend of mine now, Brendan Warburton at Sheffield City ABC. He was like, right, I've got another boxer, another two boxers that you can work with. So I started working with them at the start of 2013. From there, I started working with a lot more boxers from that gym. Started doing a Saturday morning session with £3.50 a session. It was from that meeting, that coach there, is that I started building the momentum, started working with one boxer, and then they've got a friend, and then you start building a low-cost session to entice people in. Now, the big turning point for us is when we did the testing battery. It was for my master's. Alan, you'll have seen it 1,000 times with students when they're doing their testing. They probably go a little bit half-hearted trying to get the mates in to do it. Somebody tried getting me doing beetroot or something like that, drinking that for a week or something like that. And I'm just like, I can't be bothered. There's nothing in it for me. I'm literally doing it for that person. Most like university studies, masters and undergraduate is mostly like just the friends taking part in it. Whereas like me, I was like, right, this is my chance to get people in, to get interested. So what I did a propaganda. I did Muhammad Ali and I did the Boxing Needs You for this important research to enhance the training. Gave them a specific need to what they're going to actually get out of that testing. So I was saying, right, from this testing, you're going to have a session where I'm going to go through your strengths and your areas for improvement. So basically, we took them through that testing battery that I just mentioned there, a few different variations of that, posted it out on Facebook because I really pushed the boundaries on that. We got around about 35 people coming in to create this first initial database, this first initial study. But from there, I got them back in and gave them the feedback and the areas for improvement, gave them a nice sheet of paper that really highlighted what they needed to work on. That's when I first started working with boxers 3-4 times a week. And that was really the hub to really start off and branching out. Because from there, started working with professional boxers, started working with more professional boxers from their gym and started just going up through the levels there. It's about just creating that momentum, creating that interest. And to get people in for the first time, you've got to make sure that they're gaining something from that. We were like saying about the other day, weren't they, when the boxers were doing the testing for the isometric holds and stuff like that. We need to give them a reason for why they need to take part in this and giving them a low cost or free service, like a little bit like a taster, and then just keep building up from there. So yeah, that's kind of how we started. With working with them athletes and everything, we were still separate, like not really aligned with the university at that point, Sheffield Hallam University. It was always my dream and vision to have a gym, probably not even half as good as this. But what was holding me back was thinking about the costs of the equipment, because it says Boxing Science on logo, not boxing training in my back garden or lift some dumbbells and everything. Even though I could do that, I needed to meet the demands of our reputation, our profile. I knew that I'd cost a lot of money. So at the start of pandemic, I'm literally working with a handful of boxers, it peaks and troughs with professional boxing. Sometimes you work with it really, really busy. Sometimes you have a dip. And at this point, I'm having a little bit of a dip just going into the pandemic. And when, obviously, lockdown and everything, lost all my kind of income through the boxers. I had another role in golf, lost that. So basically, I was like, right, it's make or break. I was thinking, I haven't got any furlough or anything like that. So I'm like thinking, from my neck, do I need to go and get a job? But I thought, right, I'm going to maximize this as best as I can, give out as much kind of free content and really build my profile. So like doing workouts every day and doing ways to adapt your training and stuff like that. We did a free webinar series. No, I was doing quite well in terms of my Instagram following at that point, 20,000. But by the end of 2020, went from 20 to 100,000 followers. And then now we're on 200,000 followers with another Boxing Science page that's on 150,000 followers. And that was all from giving out free information. And a lot of people try and hold that back. They try and hold it back, keep the secrets, because if they think that they give it, they're not going to receive anything in return. But if you give as much as you can, there'll be a certain percentage that comes through in terms of your programming, through people come walking through the door, wanting a testing session, coming onto courses like this. I feel like that was a very pivotal moment in terms of trajectory as a business, is start steadily going along over years. And then as soon as it hit that, it went through the roof. So within there, we thought, right, this is now the time that we can move into our own facility. That's where we started Boxing Science Performance Center. And we were like trying to do the maths and trying to work out whether I can still earn enough while still having this facility, investing all this money into the kit and everything. Fast forward 2 years later, we've got staff here. Instead of just myself, we've got Tommy, we've got Ben, we've got former nutritionist Lee Rickard. So within like 2 years, even though this was a massive, massive risk and massive change to the business, making that step, making that leap has made it kind of go up to the next level. Vision for this facility here is to be the best independent sports science facility, definitely in the north, because it's not much going off up here. But hopefully in the one day in the UK. So thank you very much for watching or listening to the podcast. Before you leave, I'd like to ask a quick favor. Could you hit that subscribe button? Hit the like button if you're on YouTube. And then if you're on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating, hopefully a 5-star one. Give us some feedback on how we're doing. You know, what things that you want to see from the podcast, different guests that you want on, or if you've got a question that you want to ask, leave them in the comment box below. Thank you very much. Hopefully see you on the next episode of Boxing Science Podcast.